Matt Williamson and Ryan McDowell.
Welcome into another edition of the Dynasty Blueprint. I'm your host, Ryan McDowell. I'm joined, as always, by Matt Williamson. Matt, how's it going today?
Things are good, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. I just feel like we're just a little bit closer to real football. We look forward so much to the preseason, and now it's nearly over. It flew by, and week one is almost here.
Yeah, I can't wait. This next week's going to be long. I mean, I got to say, more than ever, I feel like coaches are resting their stars this preseason, and I think next week's going to be a bore fest.
Yeah, I'm sure, as always, we won't see any of the big names in week four. But yeah, you're right. Week three, everybody calls it the dress rehearsal, and it actually felt like real football. It felt like the regular season, but that wasn't the case this year. A lot of the players sat out altogether in week three. A lot just played the first half. So yeah, they're dialing it back. And maybe one reason is all the injuries that we've seen, especially this past weekend, which was really rough.
No doubt. And, you know, guys like Cam Newton, Ben Roethlisberger, they play one series. You know, it's like, so that's how I do it if I was a coach. I mean, I got no qualms with it.
Well, Matt, we've got an awesome guest here today, and this is the perfect person to talk training camp and preseason action. We've got Bob Henry from Football Guys. Bob, how's it going, man?
Thanks for having me. It's that time of season. We're all ready for the real action to start.
Exactly. Bob, I don't know, this feels like your main event, because I know one of your big responsibilities over at Football Guys is the training camp updates. And I think we're 3 weeks into that now. I believe there's three editions of that out. And that's just been, for years and years, one of my go-to resources as the regular season nears. It covers everything you can imagine when it comes to the NFL and fantasy football.
Yeah, that's pretty much the style and the whole intent of it all. When Joe and David asked me years ago if I would run that baby. And the whole objective was try to get ourselves in the huddle, so to speak, and try to gather all those nuggets, the great little coaches' comments and quotes, or players' quotes, GM comments, practice notes, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, if you literally fall asleep in August, you could just get up once a week, come out of your weekly hibernation, read that thing, and know exactly what's going on, and have a really good bead on all that. Of course, prone to hyperbole because it is the preseason, right? So you got to pump the brakes here on some of these players, but that's the whole point, right? Is to see who's rising, who's falling, who's hot, who's catching the eye of the coaches, what undrafted free agent is sparking some interest on the team and making a run at a position, and all that kind of stuff. It's not just about, you know, who's going to be the starting running back or if Deshaun Kizer is going to start for the Browns. It's those other battles. And even on the defensive side, that's the real joy and fun of it.
Oh, it's really good stuff. I've been reading it for years now too. I mean, well before I got involved with Football Guys, really is one-stop shopping. I mean, if you just want to read about your favorite team, it's worth it. Or the teams in your favorite team's division. Or if you want to read the thing cover to cover, it's great. I mean, week after week, you guys do a great job. And Bob, I'm curious, how many years have you been involved with that?
With that? Wow. You know, so I don't know if you guys remember or how long you were around before, you know, or in the early days of the websites and fantasy football. I started Red Eye Sports in 1999, ran that for about 4 years or so. And then I joined Joe and David and all the great guys at Football Guys, John Norton and I did, and Gene Bramble. Gene Bramble's with us at Red Eye Sports. So we moved over and, you know, never looked back. It was been the best thing ever being part of Football Guys. And when I joined over, I was doing everything from projections to writing the waiver wire report and sleepers and all sorts of stuff like that. And as we added more talent onto the staff, you know, we got more people involved. And Joe and David approached me for doing the training camp reports. And I had to take a big gulp on that because I was just telling you guys earlier, I used to do all 32 teams in true Red Eye fashion and sleep maybe 8 or 10 hours the whole weekend. Which put a lot of onus on me, but also put a lot of onus on Jason Wood doing the editing for those things after writing that long over the weekend. I'm sure I made a lot of errors, but Jason's the champ of all champs when it comes to editors. And as a team, we've just built it out from then. So thankfully now, you know, I don't do that much writing. I certainly compile it, put it all together, make sure all the, you know, everything is there. We're not missing any high you know, any kind of stories or innuendos that could be overlooked. But we have a great group of guys and staff at Football Guys, and we harness the power of the multitude of people we have and the talent we have on staff there to put these things out now. So, you know, I'd like to defer most of the credit to all those great writers putting most of the time in, and then, you know, obviously Jason editing, and then I come in and make sure everything looks good and assemble it, compile it, put it all together.
Good stuff. Real good stuff.
I just can't imagine writing that full report by yourself. So that you definitely earned your stripes doing that over the past few years.
The first time I turned the first, season one, episode one, we used to do five of them too. After a while, I'm like, you know, we probably only need to do four, because after the fourth game, it's we don't need that. In the first week or so until the games are played, it's just, you know, you're rehashing a lot of OTA stuff and everything else. But yeah, the first one I turned in, I think it was 46 pages. And Joe was like, whoa, can we get like a Cliff Notes version of this, Bob? At which point I'm like, you know, somebody else is going to have to do that. I'm too fried at this point.
Wow.
Because you have a real job too, right?
That's right. That's right. I butter my bread elsewhere for the day job.
Yeah, I give you guys credit to do this on the side with a real job. I mean, it's a lot of work.
But Bob, just covering preseason and training camp over the past several years, it sounds like maybe the past 10 years for Football Guys, do you feel like fantasy players and maybe dynasty players specifically put too much stock into preseason action or not enough?
You know, that's a really good question. I think certainly I come from a dynasty background. I was telling you, my main league is it's not even a dynasty league. I don't know what we classify it as, a salary cap league, I guess. And you know, preseason's always been a great thing for us, because we always want to see that fourth or fifth receiver, you know, that second, third, fourth running back, guys that may emerge during the season, or, you know, you may take before somebody gets hurt. You just may take a flyer on them as a priority waiver or something like that because you saw them flash in the preseason. So I think, you know, if you're just a casual redraft leaguer, you certainly pay attention to preseason, but not like you do if you're a dynasty league player or, you know, a keeper league or something like that. And I think the same is true. But, you know, I would say in the last 5 or 6, 7, maybe 10 years, football itself has become such a mainstream year-round headline-generating sport. There is no offseason. That used to be one of my taglines at Red Eye Sports, is there is no offseason. You know, championships are won in the offseason. So I've always loved the offseason, the draft season, preseason, OTAs, all that. But now it's just a steady stream. And dynasty leaguers pay a lot of attention to that. And of course, you know, a lot of dynasty leagues draft early on in the season. So, I think in general, dynasty leaguers pay more attention to it. At least the finer details of the depth charts and the rosters and the battles going on.
Not to mention, I mean, dynasty league players are advanced fantasy players in general. You know, I mean, my buddies, we have our redraft league coming up where we go to Deep Creek, Maryland, and we rent a pontoon boat, and we do a lot more beer drinking and stuff than we do talking about football. I mean, those guys would die in dynasty.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, right.
And you know, especially with the rookies, because I mean, everybody's smitten by rookies, but dynasty leaguers are absolutely you know, zoned in on them through the draft process, and especially when you want to see them play on the team and in, you know, for that coach and in the system and see how they do.
Bob, we're going to talk about a few specific teams today and some situations that dynasty owners and fantasy players in general should be watching. But before we get to those, I just wonder, digging through that document the past 3 or 4 weeks that Football Guys has produced, what are some of your key takeaways over this past preseason and training camp?
You know, I mean, there's obvious big headlines that, you know, the last weekend or two, especially, you have everything from Ezekiel Elliott's suspension to the major injuries. And we've seen some pretty big ones in the last few days, from Spencer Ware to Julian Edelman to Cameron Meredith. You know, I think those are the key takeaways, key headlines. You know, every team has a different storyline, though, and you're looking for, you know, coaching changes and if players are fitting those schemes, or, you know, we project players into roles based on schemes in a new team, based on what the coach did at the last team. Obviously Kyle Shanahan comes to mind, you know, in Atlanta, just because they were so good. And you know, he goes to San Francisco now, and we're trying to project folks into those same roles occupied by a Taylor Gabriel or things like that. So you're looking for those types of things, those patterns or those roles to emerge, and whether they hold true to how we project them. But yeah, in general, I think some of the key takeaways, you guys touched on it a little bit earlier, and that, you know, when the third game hit and it was the rehearsal, and I'm like, where's Todd Gurley? Did he get hurt? Yeah. So I'm looking to Twitter, I'm looking to Roto World or other news blurbs, and just doing a double take just to make sure, you know, folks that you don't expect to be hurt or didn't hear anything are actually, they're just sitting out. So it gives you a little bit of a heart attack when you see some of those things. And, you know, it's just
so much of it nowadays too.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, the key takeaways are really just, you know, watching the games as always. Don't just look at the box scores. I think the key takeaway for me, every training camp is taking a look at who's playing against who and matching that up. And, you know, your eyeballs usually tell you the truth. So when players are shining, that's a really good thing. And if they're not, sometimes it's not always their fault that, you know, teams are running really vanilla schemes. And if they're going against the ones, it's a lot different than going against the threes when you know, it's a different landscape competitively.
Well, let's get into some of these specific teams. We talked about several last week, and we want to cover some more this week as we do get ready for week one. Let's start with the Eagles. Been a lot of talk this offseason about some of the moves they've made, bringing in Alshon Jeffrey and LeGarrette Blount, getting rid of Jordan Matthews. But the player who just kind of goes under the radar a little bit is actually their quarterback, Carson Wentz. I haven't heard much talk about him at all. And Bob, I'm wondering your thoughts on him from a dynasty perspective. Do you think he can make that leap that we saw from Derek Carr and Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota over the past couple of years, where they went from kind of that unknown young quarterback to almost an elite level dynasty asset?
I do. I really do. And there's a lot of factors. I mean, some of them are less dynasty and more even just looking at the matchups and the landscape of the NFC East. The one thing that I was looking at when I was first doing my projections, you know, even before the draft and right around the draft time, was it seemed like just a big gap of poor secondaries in the NFC East. Philadelphia's looked just devoid of talent at first. And so when you think, wow, you know what? The Eagles' defense looks really poor, especially against the pass. And he already threw the ball a ton last year. So, you know, what is that going to portend for him? And then they go and add, you know, players like Jeffrey and even Torrey Smith, I guess. But, you know, he is a good deep threat, if nothing else. And even just adding guys like Mac Hollins, perhaps a better running game. They got a solid offensive line. And I thought Wentz looked really good as a rookie, all things considered. Obviously, he had some really sketchy spots, and he was also had a lot thrown at him in terms of the pure volume and what he was asked to do as a rookie. So I think everything I've read and seen is that he's put in the time. You know, he had some camps up there. Where do they go, in Montana or Dakota or something like that? Big Sky Country. And there's some good drops from Jordan Matthews on that. There's just a bunch of redheads up there, I think is what he said. There's nothing else but drinking beer and a bunch of redheads up there. So that's pretty funny. But, you know, Wentz certainly has the talent. He can move around. He's mobile. He seems to be making at least decent reads for a young quarterback, with his lack of experience or experience. And I do think he'll make a step forward. And, you know, I have to come clean here because I am an owner of Wentz. So my buddies will say I'm a bit of a homer for saying that. But I do think he's one of the up and comers. I don't know how far he'll make as far as the jump. I do think he's definitely a really good target as a high end backup QB2 or a really good QB2 in leagues to start to. And like I said, we'll see what the Cowboys defense ends up being like. They haven't looked too good in the preseason. They do have some young talent in that secondary. In the draft, they added a couple of good players. Maybe the Redskins will have the best secondary, and the Giants lost a few. So we'll see. There should be a lot of balls being slung around in the NFC East this year.
It sounds like you're a Wentz believer. I'm a massive Wentz believer for the long term. I don't just don't know about for a redraft in 2017.
Yeah, well, that's fair. I don't expect him, you know, jump in the top five or six or anything like that. It's a really deep class of quarterbacks this year from a fantasy perspective. And even if he jumps into that 13 to 15, 16 range, that's pretty notable if you really think about it. And I do think he has that capability, but I would say his ceiling maybe around quarterback 10 to 15 in that range. And his probable range of outcomes is anywhere from 10 to 20. You know, it all depends. If they improve defensively with that offensive line, they adding Blunt, maybe they shift more heavy to the run, and you know, on the run side of the run pass ratio, and his attempts go down, much like everybody was projecting Blake Bortles this year. Obviously that's a different reason, although I guess it is somewhat the same. You want to protect your young cornerbacks, but we'll see. Yeah, I think he's rock solid, and he's going to be a good you know, cornerstone for the Eagles.
Yeah, I guess I just think about the kind of the current quarterback landscape in the NFL and how that affects dynasty leagues. You think about some of the top quarterbacks are over 35 years old at this point, and we just don't know how much they have left. Of course, Ben Roethlisberger's already talked about considering retirement. And then you look at guys like Breeze and Brady who are pushing 40, if not there already. There's going to be a huge opportunity for guys like Wentz to make that leap if they can prove it on the field.
No doubt.
Bob, let's move over to the 49ers. You already talked a little bit about Shanahan making the move there, obviously rebuilding that team, kind of putting his stamp on that squad with a lot of additions they've made. I really think the wide receiver moves they've made are interesting. Adding Pierre Garçon was the kind of the headliner there. They gave him a ton of money, but they also added Aldrick Robinson, who of course played for Shanahan in Atlanta, and added Marquise Goodwin. I just wonder if those two can kind of repeat the Robinson Taylor Gabriel role from Atlanta. And for dynasty players, should that even matter? Are they going to be kind of those gimmick deep ball guys, or can they be actual factors on a weekly basis?
Yeah, that remains to be seen. And of course, Atlanta has some trump cards that San Francisco doesn't. They have Matt Ryan. They have, you know, Julio Jones. They have some really serious talent there. I mean, even Devontae Freeman. Carlos Hyde, I've always thought, is a pretty solid talent. And of course, there's a lot of debate whether or not he is a fit for that scheme. And mostly the debate has been that he's not, right? And John Lynch is looking to replace him, and the whole story with Joe Williams. Then here we are as we record this. The biggest buzz is Matt, how you say his last name, Breida?
Breida?
May be the backup there. And all offseason, I've had plenty of tweets about this, about Joe Williams, who I think is a fine talent. You know, he should be a good long-term player for them, and especially as they are patient with him and move him into the system. But, you know, Tim Hightower was a league winner a couple of years ago, and Ingram got hurt. And people seem to just scoff and overlook a veteran like that has probably plenty of gas in his tank left. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen in that backfield? As far as the receivers, to your point, Pierre Garçon was obviously the biggest move there, and he's going to be just a target king, you have to imagine. After that, it gets really interesting. Now, Marquise Goodwin, Olympic speed and all that, he certainly has flashed in the preseason. He's made some big catches, and I think, what has he scored twice? If I'm correct on that, a couple long range touchdowns. Jeremy Curley is an interesting player. I think Chase Stewart or somebody like that. Good old Chase throws out a lot of good statistical nuggets out there from football perspective. It might not have been him, but somebody said something about Jeremy Curley where he's, I think every team he's been on for the last 3 or 4 years, he's led his team in targets. I don't know if that's how bad the teams he's been in.
I think that's a chicken or egg situation.
Exactly. So, we're not gonna talk about Jeremy Curley, but he's obviously a glue guy. You know, he's a guy that can round out that and be a good versatile slot receiver. But, you know, the player that I'm keeping an eye on and who I really like, just having watched him a little bit, is Trent Taylor. I know he's small and all of that, but I think he could probably emerge – is an inside receiver down the road, and he's looked pretty productive in what I've seen of him so far this preseason. So I don't know if he may not even make the team, but I suspect he will, and he could even have a role at some point this year. Aldrick Robinson is hung on forever. Certainly Shanahan brought him over along with Garcon, so he has experience with both of those players. He would be your ideal fourth receiver, just like he was in Atlanta, to, you know, those go routes, and when you spread the field, he's going to probably get the least coverage, or the dime corner or something like that, from which he can exploit. And his whole career, he's never been really a full-time player, but he's always made a career of averaging 20, 30 yards a catch, it seems like, or having a high touchdown to catch ratio. So we'll see what goes on there. Certainly they have some interesting pieces. I don't know how many of them will pan out for fantasy, but you definitely think Garcon's got a great shot at a wide receiver two, wide receiver three. And Goodwin is somebody I would definitely throw a dart at in the latter half, or, you know, latter quarter of the draft and redraft.
Ryan, I'm curious. Do you know what's it cost you to get Carlos Hyde right now?
I think he's kind of starting to trend back up in Dynasty.
I bet.
Yeah, I mean, there was even, I'm sure you guys remember, there was even the rumor that they could trade or even cut him, and I think that's pretty obviously not happening at this point. So, yeah, starting to trend back up. He's probably going to cost you a late first rounder, I would think, if you're talking rookie picks. Yeah.
I wanted to mention our buddies over at Loot Crate. When you sign up for Loot Crate, I've told you guys about them before. They send you a package to your door every month. It's the best surprise you know is coming. There's a different theme every month. It's really good stuff. It's high quality stuff too. So if this is what you're all about, you got to sign up for Loot Crate. So if you want to be the envy of your friends and get 100% off exclusive crates at lootcrate.com/dynastyblueprint, enter our code Dynasty Blueprint and you'll save a couple bucks off an already cheap subscription. If you're on a quest for epic gear, housewares, collectibles, Loot Crate has it. It's the best surprise you know is coming. Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. If you're more of a fanatical fashionata, then try Loot Wear. Monthly wearables and accessories with cult classics and your favorite franchises. If you want to get fancy, try a bigger box with even bigger loot at Loot Crate DX. Or this is my favorite. If you want to geek out your pet, try Loot Pets. In August Loot Crate, you will find items from The Legend of Zelda, Adventure Time, and Lord of the Rings. Kingdom is their theme this month. One lucky subscriber will also win a mega crate of seriously epic proportions. So go to lootcrate.com/dynastyblueprint, enter our code dynastyblueprint, and you will save a couple bucks off an already cheap monthly subscription.
Bob, let's look at the Seahawks next. On this show, we've talked a lot this offseason about the trio of running backs they've got there now. Of course, Eddie Lacy, Thomas Rawls, and CJ Procise. And I've shared my opinion, and I think Matt maybe agrees, that we just don't really trust any of those guys to stay healthy, unfortunately. And we're already seeing signs of that with a couple of them. But a rookie there, Chris Carson, has kind of emerged lately over the past couple of weeks of the preseason. Do you think he's for real, and could he earn a significant role in this offense?
Why not? I think it goes back to something I said earlier. Does he pass the eye test? And he doesn't have the college production. There's no doubt about that, even though I remember in the pre-draft process, a few people were calling him out as somebody to really watch, somebody that wasn't as productive but certainly had the talent and the measurables. And when the measurables stack up, your eyes don't lie what you see on the screen. And, you know, he seems like he can block pretty well. He runs between the tackles. He can catch. He seems to have all, you know, the whole well-rounded sort of molded piece of clay you want as a running back prospect. So, you know, why not is the thing I say. So I would throw a dart at him. Even in redraft, just throw a last round or late round pick at him. In Dynasty, absolutely. You look at somebody like Eddie Lacy, who's kind of on a try or buy basis for the Seahawks. You know, they're not vested heavily in him. Thomas Rawls is highly productive as he's been, and efficient as he's been. and just physical, just a really good looking running back. He can't stay healthy. He's had a bad wheel among other injuries. And CJ Procise, my Lord, that guy probably could be the best of them all, but he can't stay on the field either. So this is one of those classic situations where the fourth running back could definitely be on the field. And for that matter, Alice Collins has recommitted himself in the offseason, came in. Now, he hasn't flashed quite as much in the games in practices, but he certainly has gotten himself in better shape. And if he's cut, I wouldn't be surprised if he lands somewhere else and potentially has a shot for playing time.
Bob, I'm kind of putting you on the spot here because I don't know the answer, and I'm hoping you do. If you don't, no big deal. But does Carson have any special teams value? I'm sitting here thinking, I mean, for a fourth running back to have an impact on an NFL team, he's got to help on teams.
Well, you would think so. Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if he's played special teams at Oklahoma. Was Oklahoma State?
Okay.
Is that where he was? Oklahoma or Oklahoma State? I think it was Oklahoma State.
I'm positive. Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. But everything I hear about him as far as his blocking and tackling, and maybe I assume if he's a good blocker, he could tackle it. He seems to have a good all-around skill set and lunch pail kind of guy. So I wouldn't – in this, you know, with that coaching staff there, the sun's always shining, and, you know, I would imagine they want to put him on the field any way they can. So I would have to guess that he probably does have some special teams utility, but I don't know that to be 100% true.
He's the makeup of a good kickoff return type.
Yeah, absolutely. Or even just uncovered.
Yeah, for sure.
The thing with Carson and Henderson with Denver, you know, those guys have kind of been hot names in the dynasty circles over the past week or two. And it's as much about their competition, I think, as it is about what they're doing. They've both been impressive. But when you look at the backs in Seattle, and we've already talked about health issues with each of them, you look at the competition that Henderson has in Denver, and CJ Anderson kind of seems to be trending in the wrong direction. Booker can't stay on the field. Charles, he looked good in week three, but no one really knew what to expect from him coming off that injury. So for me, the way I'm valuing those guys, it's as much about their opportunity and their competition as it is what I think about them as prospects.
And that's always the other half, right? It's talent and opportunity. And when the two come together, really good things can happen.
Which leads us to Tampa with Doug Martin out.
Yeah, exactly.
How about that segue, Ryan?
That was nice.
There you go.
That was nice. Let's talk.
Yeah, I read your write-up, or at least I pulled it up.
There's a first time for everything.
Right. Stranger things.
Let's talk about the Tampa backfield, though. This one is a strange one as well. And I don't know. I don't know if they have the young up and coming running back who can maybe take charge like Seattle and Denver might. We know the deal with Doug Martin. He's facing a suspension to begin the season, but everyone's still pretty much valuing him in fantasy leagues as if he is the starter. And they've got some depth there with Jacquizz Rodgers, Charles Sims. They drafted McNichols, but the latest word is he might not even make that team. So I don't know. That may end up being a wasted draft pick for Tampa and maybe for fantasy owners as well. Bob, on your dynasty teams, do you want any of these guys?
Yeah, you know, I like Jeremy McNichols coming out of college. I thought he went into an interesting place with the Bucs. And then we get into preseason, and the coaching staff is raving about Charles Sims again, which you're like, okay, well, maybe McNichols is going to play Sims because he seemed like that would seem the most fitting as far as skill sets and so forth. But a healthy Sims is a hard guy to supplant, I would imagine, because he is a good pass-catching back, and he's very good in that particular role for the team and has been before. I tend to be more of a Doug Martin believer, despite all the reasons not to believe in him. And this is the classic every other year for Doug Martin, and we have the contract and everything else. So he's definitely motivated. He looks in good shape. And Jacquizz Rodgers really reemerged last year. So it's a bit of a split backfield, like you said, multiple personalities. And I could totally see where a rookie like Jeremy McNichols is getting lost in that, especially if he has any sort of dings or bumps and bruises coming in and it sidelined him in practices. I think most recently we're hearing about him running behind Peyton Barber and Hansborough. So that's not a good sign.
No.
And I don't think they're going to be very successful trying to stash him on the practice squad. So unless he comes up with some faux injury and they slide him onto the injured reserve or something, he's a classic claim candidate, much like, you know, several years ago now when I think it was Jeff Fisher that had LeGarrette Blount and caught him and tried to stash him. And if I recall, it was the Bucks that claimed him. See if my memory's rusty there or not. At any rate, we know Blount was in that same kind of position, even though he was undrafted. So I don't know. We'll have to find out here. And either way, I think there's going to be a back that gets claimed, because if Peyton Barber gets cut, I would imagine he has some sort of value around the league and somebody might be interested in him. An old Matt Walton favorite, right?
Yeah, I was just about to say, he's Walton favorite. He's got kind of a downhill style to him that's sort of Doug Martin-esque. I mean, I think that's what that offense wants to do, is they kind of play 80s football of a lot of downhill runs, deep shots off of that. I think Barber kind of fits better than the Rook. And I'm a huge Doug Martin fan. I think he's going to have a really big year. Is he more cheaper or more expensive than Carlos Hyde right now to buy, Ryan?
Oh, he's I think he's cheaper. He's way cheaper. Yeah.
Yeah.
Way cheaper? I mean, you can get him for a mid-second?
Well, I mean, if you find the right trade partner, you know, I mean, if I'm a contender and I've got Martin, then I'm probably not selling for a second. There's not much motivation right to do that. But I would say this for sure. I don't think anybody would expect to get a first rounder for him.
Okay. I mean, if you're not a contender, though, you're not taking a 2018 second for him, though, are you?
No, that's what I'm saying. Okay. You've got to find that
more than that.
Right, you got to find that right trade partner. But I mean, if you're a building team, a rebuilding team, and you've got him on your roster, then you might take a second for him. But I mean, as always with guys like that, it's better to sell during the season than in the preseason or off season.
While he's suspended.
maybe a few weeks in.
Right.
Bob, let's look at the Titans next. More backfield talk here. Dynasty owners love Derrick Henry. In fact, we've talked on this show about how he's basically been valued higher than DeMarco Murray for much of his short career there in Tennessee. But Murray continues to hang on to that job, of course, and we don't expect that to change at least anytime soon. But do you think Henry plays a larger role this year, and maybe can he increase his dynasty value even more?
I would like to think so. I've been bullish on Henry, even as a rookie. And, you know, geez, it still depends on DeMarco. DeMarco Murray's just a beast, and when he's healthy, it's hard to take him off the field. You know, the exotic smash mouth, I'd love to see them try to put both of them on the field and mix the touches up a little bit more. I'd love to see Henry a little bit more in the passing game, because I think when you get him out on the edge, he's just a load against those smaller outside linebackers or corners or safeties. And, you know, I've followed Henry a long time. Ryan, you and I've chatted back and forth on Twitter about players and in your Debbie stuff like that. I'm a big Michigan Wolverine fan, but even more so, I follow, you know, the recruiting, which is another whole level, a whole nother layer of sickness, right? there's this draftnik sickness, and then there's the recruiting sickness. So I follow all the recruiting stuff, and, you know, Derrick Henry, I just remember when he was coming out of high school, he's Mr. Football out of Yulee, Florida, track and field athlete, number one athlete in the nation, All-American, all that kind of stuff. And you just remember as a high schooler seeing those proportions of him and the size, and is he really going to be a running back? And then you watch it play out, of course, for Alabama, playing in the SEC against the toughest competition. I've been a believer of him for a long time, and it's just going to be fun to see him get that opportunity. You know, I have projected for 155 carries and about 20 catches. We'll see. You know, if DeMarco Murray goes down, he's the one guy I think that absolutely could be, you know, not in your top 25 right now, overall redraft or you know, dynasty is certainly higher than that. But next year I could see him being a first round pick in redraft leagues just based on pure opportunity and obviously with the talent he has.
Bob, I don't know if you know this, but I was a recruiting assistant at Pitt for 3 years. And then I went to Akron as a director of ops. So I watched a ton of high school tape many moons ago, and you brought up Derrick Henry. And all I could think about was, I can't imagine what he looked like as a 16 or 17-year-old as a running back against – I mean, he's a man amongst boys now. And was it Bama? I mean, I've been so out of the recruiting loop. I might have to do a YouTube highlight tape and just see what he looked like. It must have been unbelievable.
Yeah, go through on the huddle tape, right? well, if you, especially if you're a Mr. Football in Florida, which, I mean, you could make it.
Wow, well, it says Texas, everything you know there.
California, Florida, Georgia, those states, even Ohio, are just so rich in talent. But to be the Mr. Football in the state of Florida and a track and field athlete at that size just speaks of just how overall, you know, athletic and not just big and strong, but fast and just a purebred athlete. And he's going to be fun to watch. He's really going to be a star in the league, I would have to think. And it could come sooner. I mean, if Murray gets hurt, you have to think Derrick Henry moves right into the RB1 situation pretty darn quick.
Oh, yeah.
Immediately.
I still think he should have been an edge pass rusher.
That would be fun.
Like a Von Miller type? Oh, man.
So, Bob, it sounds like you're a big fan of Henry. If you are if you're in the Dynasty League, are you buying him right now? Are you going to wait until the season starts and he's still running behind Murray? Maybe some of that shine comes off. What's your strategy with trying to acquire him?
Yes, yes, yes. Always try to get Henry. I think the longer you wait, the higher price is going to go up. And, you know, we just, like I was telling you guys, we had our Dynasty auction rookie draft yesterday. And the guy who has Henry also has Kareem Hunt. So he drafted him with, was it the 7th pick, I believe. And so the Devonta Freeman owner was trying to trade Freeman for Henry and Hunt. And we were all going, nah. That's
– I mean, I'd rather the two young guys. Yeah.
Rich on both sides, but I'm keeping Henry and Hunt for sure on that one. And there was no budge going on there. You know, when you got Henry and Hunt, you kind of know what you have, and you're going to let that play it out. And you're not going to invest in those two guys and then trade them before you get to cash in. You know, you want to see that play out. So the future is bright for both those kids.
Bob, let's finish up today with the Redskins. Seems like Dynasty owners were really excited about Samaje Perine when he landed in Washington, mostly, again, due to his competition or lack thereof. It feels like we all just expected him to walk right in and claim that job from day one, and that hasn't really been the case. We've seen more of a fight from Rob Kelly than expected, and you guys in your latest training camp report described Kelly as outworking and outplaying Perine basically the entire offseason. What are your thoughts on Perine at this point? Is he just a little bit slower to adjust to the NFL, or is maybe Kelly's better than we thought?
I think both. Kelly is playing better than I anticipated, and we've all read the stories and we've seen him now in the preseason. He looks pretty good. He certainly seems like he's in better shape, and we know him to be in better shape from all the reports of losing weight. You know, the 1/3 less fat Rob Kelly, I guess, is his new title. all the bang for your buck, but less calories. But, you know, they got a great offensive, or really good offensive line anyway. And I still will bet on the better talent in the long run. And I do think Samaje Perine is the better talent. I was smitten with him at Oklahoma. I definitely loved him throughout the draft process. And when he landed in Washington, you know, it was a knee-jerk reaction to everybody was all over Perine. Like, this is a guy that might have the best shot to win or, you know, overtake the incumbent and get some playing time right out of the gate. And I projected him very bullishly out of the gate, like 200 plus carries. And even in the passing game, I thought he was just going to come in and be a physical, at least capable blocker and demonstrate his chops there. But I think he's a little bit underprepared there, let's say. Kelly's come in and he certainly showed up and done his part. And hey, you know, all the credit to Kelly. He's doing what he needs to do, and he's performing, and the coaches like him and they trust him. You know, he hasn't fumbled or anything like that. Now, as we've seen with Matt Jones, if Kelly fumbles a couple of times in week one, all bets are off and anybody could jump into that spot. And I do think over time, Perine will prove himself. He's just such a solid physical runner. At some point, I think the cream will rise to the crop and he's going to be fine. So buy low, don't hesitate, draft him in the first or second round, wherever you're able to get him. And I would still be drafting him. Absolutely. He's a target.
I think that's really well said. I mean, this really feels like coaches, like you said, him coming in, quote, unprepared, perhaps, that Kelly still is who he is, and maybe he looks a little better, and maybe he felt threatened, and he's getting himself into shape and all those things. But P. Ryan's just better, and I don't think it's going to take long at all before we see that. I mean, unless this kid's a knucklehead and doesn't work and doesn't do what he needs to do, but I think he'll go past Kelly when it really matters soon, which makes me think if I have Kelly, I'm taking whatever I get for him right now.
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, you know, there's something to be said about a player like Kelly who has a chip on his shoulder, maybe feels like he's underrated or undervalued. I can tell you this, though. I don't think Gruden underrates him or undervalues him, and he's playing him and proving that. But as we get into week two, week four, week six, and Perrine gets, you know, more of those bumps and bruises and NFL experience under his belt, I do think ultimately he's going to be the guy. But, you know, give credit where it's due. And Kelly's showed up. He's playing out. He's earned his stripes. And I don't even know, like we said, I don't know if Perrine necessarily is underprepared as much as it's just taken him a little bit longer to overtake somebody that is really just as motivated as Kelly has been and has that trust factor. I think those two things in the blocking in the passing game are big factors for rookies. And Perrine has to prove that and do that consistently. And that's what coaches want to see. Not that you do it, you know, one practice or two practices, but you do it consistently day in, day out. And that's how he's going to do it. Ultimately, he'll get there. I don't know when it'll be. I thought it would have been by now or certainly by week two or three. Maybe it's week eight or nine. But at some point, you have to imagine that train's going to show up.
Question for both of you. And I understand that these players' stock are going opposite directions right now. Ryan, starting with you, P. Ryan or Kamara?
Oh, it's always been Kamara for me and still is.
It was for me originally. Then I switched to P. Ryan. Now I'm kind of leaning Kamara again, but they were close. Originally it was Kamara by landslide.
Interesting.
Bob, what do you think? Is it still Kamara?
Early on for me, it would have been P. Ryan for sure. But I have, okay. I switched over to Kamara there. You know, the guy just has so much ability and explosiveness, and you've seen that now, you know, playing for the Saints in the pro game. And it obviously flashed on tape. There are a couple of things that worried me. I mean, things like fumbling are always a concern. And you hope you can fix that, of course. But when you hear Sean Payton compare him not to Reggie Bush, but to Marshall Faulk, you know, you got to do a double take. Marshall Faulk, are you kidding me? Come on, man. But
that might be a little extreme. Yeah,
that might be a little extreme, and I'm sure it is. But just the same, that's lofty praise. And to even draw that comparison just shows you what that guy's doing on a day in, day out in practice and making plays like that. And especially when he's balling next to Ingram and Peterson, you have to really think that this guy is going to be pretty darn good, not only playing next to him, but learning from them, and those guys aren't going to last forever. So, and we know the Saints backfield is one to invest in. They get a lot of catches, a lot of opportunities, and it's just rich with opportunity.
Well, Bob, thanks so much for joining us today. Before we wrap it up, tell our listeners where they can find your work.
Footballguys.com, of course. And you can find me on Twitter at Bob Henry. Pretty simple. We'd love to see you guys come over, Football Guys. We have our training camp reports. Last one comes out on Wednesday. And go check out our apps online, the Draft Dominator, Lineup Dominator. We got a slew of great apps, mobile apps, as well as the desktop version. So come check us out and enjoy the fun.
All right. Thanks again, Bob. Good we'll job. Be back next week with more Dynasty Blueprint.